Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 85, 7 tips for using herbs and spices. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and today I'm going to be talking about herbs and spices, which is based on a question I received from a listener. I'm going to talk about that in just a minute. So hope things are going well for you. Glad to be back. Glad to be chatting with you. Heard from many of you in the last few weeks wondering when I was going to get a new episode out. So here I am. And just so you know, if you want to get a hold of me, you can send emails over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Or you can find me on Facebook or Twitter. By the way, I just want to say hi to Paula in Brazil, one of my more far-flung listeners. So glad you found the show. We had a nice chat on Facebook this week about all sorts of things, risotto and tomato soup and garlic and all sorts of fun stuff. So thanks for reaching out, Paula. It was great to chat with you. Love to hear from you guys. So anytime you want to chat, just send me a message. So let me see here. It's the day after St. Patrick's Day that I'm recording this, which means Easter is about a month away, which is a big problem for me because I am into candy, first of all. Let me just say that. And Easter for me is my favorite candy holiday because it's got all the weird candies. I shouldn't say weird because I don't think they're weird, but they're unusual or uncommon. And most other people think they're weird. So most people like the, you know, the Hershey bars that are miniaturized and put in Easter wrappers. Not me. I like the stuff like Peeps. Love Peeps. I know you probably think I'm crazy. Absolutely love Peeps. And I know you can get Peeps all year round now, basically. They have Peeps for all the different holidays and occasions. But Easter is really where it all started. And that's, for me, that goes way back. But the thing that they don't make anymore that I desperately miss, and I wish somebody would make this again. And I just think the company went out of business because the interest was low for whatever strange reason. And I don't know their official name. I think they're called turkey eggs, but they're these, the individually wrapped eggs. They were kind of oblong. They were this shape of probably like your thumb, maybe a little bit fatter. And they were kind of like that hard candy shell on the outside in that real sugary kind of marshmallowy filling in the middle. Do you know what I'm talking about? I really miss those. I love those. I cannot find anything like them anywhere. So like I said, it's Easter and all the unusual candy really gets me going. So hey, if any of you know where to find those, let me know because I really, really, really want to get a hold of some. All right, so enough of the preamble. Let's jump right into the meat of the show with 7 tips for using herbs and spices. Okay, so this show idea came up because of an email from another new listener I received this week, actually. And I'm not sure how to pronounce this person's first name. I'm kind of deciphering it from their email address, but I am going to say their first name is Mare. I'm not sure if that's right. So if you're listening and I'm not getting your name right, go ahead and send me another email and I'll make sure I get it right next time. But their question was really good. It had to do with herbs and spices, and it boils down to this. I was wondering your thoughts on the best time during the cooking process of a meal to add different herbs and spices to maximize their ability to complement the dish. And this is a complicated question. It's easy to give the lame answer, which I did in an email response. And the lame answer is, well, it depends on what you're cooking and what the herb or the spice is, you know, what kind of effect you're going for. You know, the lame answer to everything in life is it depends. But I thought about it a little bit more and I worked up some other answers that I included in my email response. And I wanted to share those here today. And I had a few other things that I kind of thought up after the fact as well. So even though, yeah, it really does depend on all those things I just mentioned, there are kind of rules of thumb that I use when I'm working with herbs and spices. And I thought I would share those with you. Now, let me just say right up front, if you're using a recipe that you trust, that you've either used before or comes from a source you know will not lead you astray, and it tells you how and when and how much of herbs and spices to use in the recipe, you know, follow it because they probably know what they're talking about and they've probably tested the recipe and it's going to turn out okay. So maybe the rules of thumb that I'm going to share with you now might apply in those situations, but maybe more so if you're kind of experimenting or, you know, developing your own recipes, or you're just making a dish and you think, wow, I really, this just needs a little something extra, and you open up your spice cupboard and you see what you've got going on in there. So I'm not going to talk about specific spices or specific herbs or their properties. There's tons of information on the internet about, you know, the A through Z of herbs and spices. But I just want to give you some basic tips. And I will put all of these into the show notes for this episode, which will be at kitchencounterpodcast.com/85. All right, so let's get into it. 7 tips. So tip number 1, and I've kind of broken these up into 2 sections. I kind of start off with herbs. All right, tip number 1 is that dried herbs are more potent than fresh herbs. So in general, when you take a fresh herb, let's just use, parsley, Italian parsley for an example. When you have fresh Italian parsley and dried Italian parsley side by side, you're going to need a lot less of the dried Italian parsley, the dried herb, to get the same kind of flavor punch of the fresh. And you're going to see on the internet and in books, and in general, I agree with this overall, is that it's about a 3-to-1 ratio. So if you have a recipe that calls for 3 units of a fresh herb, you could substitute a dried herb at 1 unit. So what I mean by that, if we use the parsley example, if you have a recipe that calls for 3 tablespoons of fresh parsley, you could substitute dried parsley, but you'd only need 1 tablespoon. And of course, you can work that backwards. If you have a recipe that calls for, 1 tablespoon of dried parsley, you'd probably want to use about 3 tablespoons of fresh to compensate. It leads me on to tip number 2, which is if you're using dried herbs, which I love to use. I use a lot of dried herbs when I cook because a lot of times I cook kind of slower, longer cooking dishes. I like to add those closer to the beginning of the cooking time because dried herbs do take a little bit of time to kind of coax out the flavor and kind of to get them to incorporate into the dish. So if you're making a simmering tomato sauce that you're letting simmer for an hour, let's say, or a pasta sauce, if you're going to use dried oregano, it will do you really no good to put that dried oregano in the last 10 minutes of cooking. None of that flavor is going to develop. The herbs aren't really going to be able to release their flavor and complement that dish at all. So in that case, I would put the dried herbs in towards the beginning of the cooking process. So that's dried herbs. So let's go to my next tip, which deals with fresh herbs. I typically don't use a lot of fresh herbs in my long cooking dishes. I don't like to take fresh herbs, add them into the beginning of the cooking process, because a lot of times their flavor dilutes. It just kind of gets muted and you kind of forget you put any fresh herbs in there to begin with. So if I'm using fresh herbs, I like to use them later in the cooking process as either a very late addition to the dish or as a garnish. So when you minimize the cooking time on fresh herbs, you're going to maximize their flavor. It's going to preserve their flavor. And it's going to actually maybe do some other things, like it might give you a nice pop of color on your dish as well. If you're using, a green herb on a not a green dish, it's going to give you a nice contrast. But, a lot of times longer cooking dishes, and I've talked about this in other shows, when you have a dish that cooks over a long period of time, the flavors tend to meld together. They kind of mute one another. The flavors, if you will, get kind of quote unquote muddy. And some fresh herbs right at the end can really wake the dish up and brighten it and bring some of those muted flavors to the forefront. So I really think using fresh herbs at the end of a dish are a great way to add a little zing, a little freshness to brighten up the dish and clarify flavors. All right, so those are my kind of 3 predominantly herb-centric tips, that dried herbs are more potent than fresh herbs. Dried herbs should go in towards the beginning of the cooking process, and fresh herbs should go in towards the end of the cooking process or at the end as a garnish. So let's hop into a couple of tips that have to do with spices. Okay, my 4th tip, which has to do with spices, is this. You can always add spice to a dish, but you can't take it out. So if you over-spice your dish, you're kind of screwed because you cannot take spice out of a dish, whether that spice is just a seasoning like salt or whether it's maybe a hot spice like cayenne chili powder. You can always put it in. You can't take it out. So that means you should always start slowly with your spices if you're unsure of how much you'll need and add as you go along. I think that's one of the reasons that herbs and spices can be intimidating for an inexperienced or a new home cook is that they have kind of that double-edged sword to transform a dish into something spectacular. But if you overdo it just a little bit, they have the ability to ruin a dish. So you have to have a kind of a careful hand when it comes to winging it with spices. So always start with less than you think you need, taste as it cooks, and adjust as you go along. Okay, tip number 5 also has to do with spices. This is something I don't think a lot of home cooks do, but it can really, really take your spice game up a notch, and that is toasting your dry spices before you add them to your dish will enhance their flavor. The simplest way to do this is, you know, you take a dry skillet, a dry frying pan, you know, put it on medium heat, throw your ground dried spices or whatever, you know, your dried spices that you're using, and, you know, let them heat up, stir them around a little bit. You don't want them to burn, but as soon as you can really start to smell their aroma, and maybe you can kind of even smell them toasting a bit, and you might want to, you know, stir around as you're doing this, you're really letting the flavor of those spices bloom a little bit. Don't let them burn. You know, if it starts smoking, that's okay, but don't let it go too far and burn. You know, pull it off the heat, and then just use those spices in your dish as you would have if you would have just, you know, taken them right out of a jar and tossed them into your dish. This is a really effective method to use for your quote-unquote warm spices, like your cumins and your curry powders, your cloves, your star anise. Those types of spices really benefit from a little pre-toasting. You don't have to do it. They're still going to be great in your dish, but just toasting them a little bit ahead of time will make them even more special than they already are. Tip number 6 when using spices is that if you can do it, it's not necessarily convenient, but if you can do it, whole spices will usually deliver you more flavor than pre-ground spices. Now, just let me just say right up front, I use a lot of pre-ground spices. It's just a convenience thing. I really don't have that much trouble with using pre-ground spices, but if you are really looking for a spice experience and you really want to maximize the flavors that your spices are going to give you, and if you want your spices to keep longer in storage, try using whole versions of some of the spices that you use pre-ground. So what are some whole versions of spices? Well, for example, you might have pre-ground nutmeg in your spice cabinet right now, but you can get whole nutmegs, which are basically these seeds that are, I don't know, the size of a big marble, probably bigger than that. And they're really hard. They're rock hard. And you know, you would grate these on like a really nice little microplane. These aren't something you'd throw in a spice grinder. You can get whole versions of most of the spices you probably have in your spice cabinet now. The trick is you would just need to process them in order to really probably make them usable. So you'd either need to get like a mortar and a pestle, which is that you've probably seen it if you're not familiar. It's a little bowl with kind of a little fat handle, or you put the spices in the bowl and then use that handle, the pestle, which is a crusher, you know, to kind of get in there and grind up your spices. I have a marble mortar and a pestle. It's a lot of fun to use. It's a little work, but it does a great job. You can also use an electric grinder. You don't need anything overly specific or fancy, but like an electric coffee grinder works great. I have a Krups coffee grinder that grinds coffee beans. I don't use it for that. I bought it specifically for spices. It was really inexpensive. I think I got it at Amazon. And if I have whole spices, like if I want to grind up a large quantity of black pepper, for example, and I don't want to sit there with my pepper mill and, you know, grind out a quarter cup of black pepper, I just take some whole black peppercorns, throw them in the spice grinder, and in, you know, 5 seconds, I've got some beautiful fresh ground black pepper. tip there is just make sure you don't use your coffee grinder to grind spices, because next time you go and make coffee, it all tastes spicy. You just can't get the oils and the residual powders and stuff completely out of the grinder. So I would really recommend you have a dedicated grinder for your spices. So whole spices, you're going to get a little more flavor, and they're going to last quite a bit longer than pre-ground spices, which brings me to my last tip. And that is storing your herbs and spices. Now, you're going to hear a lot of conventional wisdom about storing herbs and spices. And let me just get the easier one, which is the spices, out of the way first. So everywhere on the internet, you're probably going to find the advice that, boy, you can't keep your ground spices for more than a year. They start to lose their flavor, and you should really go out and refresh your spices annually, which, you know, you can certainly do that if you have the pocketbook and the will to do so. I have some spices that have been in my spice cabinet for a few years that I don't use very often. And quite frankly, it's fine. You're not going to get sick. They're not going to go bad. Yes, they do lose some potency over time, but I think it's overkill to think that every year you have to go and turn over your spices. I mean, that can be quite expensive, especially again, if you have spices that you don't use a lot. So don't feel pressured like you've got to always have the freshest of spices. You know, if your spices are a year or two old, it's not a big deal. But it is a good idea to keep your spices stored in a cool, dark, and preferably dry location. So like over, you know, in the cabinet directly over your stovetop probably isn't a great place to store your spices, because that's probably going to be warm and moist. But, you know, cool, dark, and dry is the best route for spices. Now, herbs are a little bit different. Again, dried herbs are going to keep a long time. Those will keep it practically as long as spices. But if you're looking to keep fresh herbs a little more fresh, well, there's a few things you could do. You know, one, you could certainly grow fresh herbs and just, you know, in little pots. We have a few little pots by our sink where we grow things like rosemary and thyme. And you can just pull off the fresh herbs that you need. That's the most fresh way you could keep your herbs. But if you get herbs at the grocery store, you know, if you wash them, dry them off, you know, pat them down with a paper towel, and then throw them into a Ziploc bag with paper towel wrapped around them, they'll probably keep in your fridge for a week or more in pretty good shape. Most herbs will do great that way. Basil's a little bit of an exception. It does not do very well in the fridge. So if you want to keep basil fresh, it's best to treat them like fresh cut flowers. You know, snip off the bottoms of their stems and, you know, put the basil in a little glass of water, basically just like you would some flowers, and they'll keep pretty well that way. Another option, which I've done before and it's kind of fun and it can be quite useful, is you can freeze your herbs. So I'll put a link in the show notes to a website to over at Serious Eats, where they've kind of looked at the different methods for freezing herbs for maximum flavor and usefulness. And they find that freezing herbs in a neutral oil, like a canola oil or a really light olive oil, you know, in freezing them in either ice cube trays or just right into Ziploc bags, kind of flat, is a great way to preserve your fresh herbs. You can just take out, you know, one of the ice cubes full of, you know, oregano or whatever it is, and throw it into your dish, and it just melts right in and you're good to go. So there are some methods you can use to keep your herbs fresh. But of course, if you use your herbs when you buy them, if you use them fairly quickly, you know, long-term storage won't be much of a problem for you. So I guess the tip there is don't buy your fresh herbs too far in advance for when you think you might need them. Okay, so those were my 7 tips for using herbs and spices. Again, if you want to get all these kind of right in front of you, you can head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/85 for the show notes. And before we wrap up the whole spice conversation, I do want to mention a book that I would recommend if you're into herbs and spices, or you want to learn more, or if you're just one of those kind of nerdy reference book types of people like I am. I would really recommend the Spice and Herb Bible. This is a book that's been through several revisions. I think the most recent edition, I think it's 2014. It's by Ian and Kate Hemphill. And they've, like I said, been putting out versions of this book for quite a while. It's a large book. It's got all the herbs and spices you could possibly ever want to know about. talks about their flavor profiles, what kind of foods they will complement, ideas for blending your own herb and spice blends. It's a great book. It's a, if again, if you like food reference books, it's a great resource to have on your bookshelf. So I will put a link to that into the show notes in case you're interested in checking it out. So thanks once again to Mayor for the idea for talking about herbs and spices. Those are my 7 general tips. If you have experiences or tips for using herbs and spices in your own kitchen, in your own cooking that you think other people should know about, send me an email to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com and I will definitely share it. Well, that does it for another episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and listening today. I know your ears can be listening to a lot of other shows, so I'm really grateful that you take the time to spend this 20 or so minutes with me. And I want to let you know, I do have another episode coming out real soon. I'm just going to be editing it right after I release this one, so you should see that one hopefully in a few days. All right, well, I just want to let you know that I really, really love that you choose to spend a little bit of time with me today. And I also want you to know that if you reach out to me on email or Facebook or Twitter, I promise I will get back to you. And I would love to start a conversation to talk about your cooking questions or your journeys in the kitchen. If you think other folks that you know would get value out of the show like you do, please feel free to share with your friends and family. I'd love for them to find me and grow our community together. All right, everybody. Thanks again for downloading and listening. This is Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.